Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. We welcome you to the show. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday, May 9th, 2023. Our show in our 13th year from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. We're on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for news and talk. Our website, buckmastershow.com, all of our content going back since we launched the program in January of 2011. The Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And we will begin on the Live Line with Dennis Hoffman, who closely studies the regional economy in Arizona. He conducts economic research for most major businesses across the state, several state agencies, and numerous foundations. Dr. Hoffman is director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business and is the director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. He also works with the state and has been doing so since 1982. With their tax revenue forecasting model. Let's welcome him back to the show. Professor Hoffman, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Bill. How about you and everyone in Tucson today?
Well, we're doing real well. Everything's in bloom down here. We've never seen so much yellow across the valley. Everybody seems to be sniffling with allergies. But other than that, we're doing pretty good.
Yes, indeed. And I looked at the weather. It looks like we got a touch of monsoons next week.
Hopefully
we get a little taste of moisture. That'd be fun.
All right. 2 months or so since we have had you on the show. Where are we right now with the state's economy?
Still hanging in quite well, Bill. There's prospects of that recession word. Everybody in the profession seems to talk about high probability of a recession, and it's been fueled most recently by regional and community bank failures. Those are all real stories. Those make sense to me, but we're not going to have a recession until the job market rolls over. And we've seen little signs of the job market cooling here in Arizona or even much across the nation. So it's still, wait and see.
Well, there's so many people so many businesses and employers looking for people. And when you've got unemployment down at what nationally around 3.5%, this is a job seeker's dream. In effect, you can find a job.
Indeed, you can. And I've not seen a recession in the post-World War II period where unemployment rates have remained below 5%. So, until we see that the jobless ranks kicking up, we're probably going to weather the storm. Now, will we weather the storm? We will see. We will see. Job losses can occur very quickly, but we're not seeing them yet, Bill.
How are you doing with the state's revenue forecasting projections? What are they looking like as lawmakers try to now hammer out a budget?
Well, we're seeing the effects of the tax cuts. Looking at this week, it's almost stunning. Looking at this week's flows of revenues this year compared to last. And of course, last year we had a big capital gains year and we had higher tax rates. And this year, of course, we have lower tax rates, lower capital gains income, and of course, higher refunds because we didn't adjust withholding rates in advance of these tax cuts. So we've got a lot less money flowing in the individual income tax coffers and a lot more flowing out in refunds. Now, we're on a big surplus to begin with, so this particular circumstance is not all that unexpected unless you were, not paying attention. But it's really pretty striking to see the numbers when you compare this year with last. It's a world of difference.
What kind of numbers are we talking about with this so-called rainy day fund?
Well, we're still there's two things going on here, Bill. We've got a rainy day fund that they're not tapping because there's no need to tap it because we still have residual surplus, and I would attribute much of it to the injections that the federal government put into this state over the last few years. And so many of our agencies have been able to spend money, federal money, and not depend upon money in the state coffers. So that has yielded this kind of ongoing, you know, extra money that we have today. But my fear, of course, Bill, and I'm a worrier, but it's, you know, like here today, gone tomorrow. Here today, gone tomorrow is really what I'm worrying about. You know, I don't know if anybody's still planning on more federal stimulus, but I don't see that in the cards. I see actually, who knows, as a result of this debt ceiling debate, there may even be less federal spending going forward. We'll see.
You think they'll hammer out a deal for the debt ceiling?
Well, they always do. Yes. And I love the questions, you know, what would happen if they don't? And, you know, I guess I would say it'd be the economics equivalent of, you know, being asked what would happen if we got hit by that asteroid again that you see in the movies. You know, it's very catastrophic, very, very much catastrophic, but very unlikely, I think, at the end of the day. A lot of political posturing, and, you know, at some point we'll get through it.
So where are we with inflation? A couple of months ago, you were tracking that very carefully and closely. If things sort of leveled out here with people's attitudes towards inflation, are the concerns still real?
Well, we've got a couple of things going on. And one I do want to spend a few minutes talking about, and that's gas prices. But in the general theme of inflation, where most of it matters, and that's in shelter, and that's in, you know, basic commodities, we're seeing improvements. You know, with each month, we're seeing improvements, and expect that national CPI number to come down, and expect, you know, that inflation in Phoenix and Tucson will certainly moderate. But one thing we got going on now is gasoline prices, and But one of my slogans is we up here in Phoenix, and I'm sure down in Tucson, you love the slogan, beat L.A., beat L.A., let's beat L.A., you know, with our football teams or our basketball teams or whatever we choose to battle them with. But we don't want to beat L.A. with gasoline prices.
No.
And we're doing it right now.
That's unusual.
You're pretty close in Tucson. And I've tried my best to get to the bottom of it. Usually when we spike here in Phoenix, you're much better in Tucson, and certainly we spike with LA, and it's usually because of our reliance on LA refineries. I'm told there's an El Paso refinery that is under maintenance, but I hope they get it fixed soon because it is. It seems like it's been some time. I've tried to communicate with them, but I can't get a response. I can't get, you know, this is not an overall gas or oil price story because nationwide, you know, averages are moderating, and it's usually not Tucson and Phoenix that lead the nation in gasoline prices, but that's what we're seeing now. And goodness knows, gases are high even in Ajo.
Yeah,
and
everywhere.
And why? Aho and why
so,
and why?
Yes. All right, ASU economist Dr. Dennis Hoffman. Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. We'll check in with you. I think we're on the calendar. See you in about a month. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Be well, and best to everyone in Tucson.
Thank you very much. The Buckmaster Show on a Tuesday. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and the market's right now pretty much going nowhere. We'll talk with Shell right after this on Buckmaster. family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
And we want to tell everybody Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for a terrific lunch and, of course, breakfast. Great breakfast. They open the doors at 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock Sunday morning. Off on Monday, the website's monasdanishbakery.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, it sounded like Professor Hoffman took a page out of your book. He says, hey, I've been in the business a long time, at least 40 years. I've never seen a recession when you've got unemployment at, what, 3.5%?
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
So, I mean, last week you had Terry Bracey on, and he gave my segment.
Yes.
And today you've got Dennis Hoffman on, and he's giving
and
my segment.
Well, they're
That's really great.
Setting, what they're doing, Chell, is they're setting the table for you. There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just...
So, you know, as we've been saying here for months and months, the risk of recession, given the excellence of the financial and economic reports we get every couple of weeks, is very, very low. Now, that said, we have any number of things that can push us, as Dr. Hoffman said, could push us into a recession. But we're not seeing those things in the economy. GDP growth remains a bit sluggish, but still positive. The employment picture is very, very good. The sense of optimism in the consuming public is still pretty good, even though we have inflation running at certainly levels that we don't like to see. As Dr. Huffman pointed out, when you take a look at core inflation, don't look at it from a year ago. A year is a long time, you know, ago. Look at it from, say, 6 months ago, and we're running at around 4%. Well, 4% is twice what the Fed would like to see, but it ain't 7, it ain't 8. It's not the kind of inflation that would create the need for the Fed to do something very, very dramatic. That said, the Fed's been doing some very dramatic stuff, and we're seeing it. We're seeing the unintended consequences of that, for instance, in the banking industry, and in also our relations with trading partners, as they are forced to match us so that they are able to maintain the value of their currencies vis-a-vis our currencies.
We heard over and over again during the pandemic, the workers are missing. Where did the workers go? Are they no longer missing?
They are no longer missing. So
they've been found?
They've been found. In fact, there was an article in, I want to say it was the Wall Street Journal, it was the Washington Post, but it might have been the New York Times, entitled "Most of the Country's Missing Workers Are No Longer Missing." So when we were running 4 or 5 months ago, 3.7% unemployment, when we took a look at the total expected labor force, that had dropped down. And so the total number of people employed seemed to be less than what we would have expected given a scenario where we didn't have a pandemic. Well, if you projected those lines out where we thought they were going to be and take a look at what the actuals are today, we're where we thought we were going to be. So all those people who, you know, theoretically disappeared, retired early, decided not to go back to work, whatever, for some, in some, in, you know, crazy way, they're back in the labor force now. So we're looking at 3.5% unemployment. And the total labor force, which is now at levels that it would have been had we not had the pandemic. That does not augur for a recession. That's not to say we couldn't have one. I mean, we're going to have a recession. The question is, you know, in what decade? But the economic numbers that came out, I mean, last week we had employment numbers that were still north of 200,000 in a month. We're looking at the number of jobs created during the Biden administration. And I don't give him credit for, you know, each one of these job gains, but it's 11 million jobs.
Yeah, it's a lot of jobs.
I mean, we don't get that normally. We're seeing, because the dollar is decreasing in value somewhat vis-a-vis our trading partners, we're becoming more and more self-reliant on manufacturing here. And the administration is doing everything that it can to promote that self-reliance in manufacturing. Now, look, you don't build a factory in 2 years, but we're building a lot of factories. And many companies that had been hesitant to hire people are hiring them and retaining them. We're seeing more and more cases now where companies are actually investing in their employees. I mean, you know, that was something when I was growing up. You know, a little company called AT&T, which hired me when I was, 27, 28 years old, spent a fortune training me. And, you know, back then the joke was you work for 40 years, you know, get a gold watch, and then you retire. So there was loyalty that the company had to the employees and the employees had to the company. That has evaporated over the past couple of decades, largely due to the, you know, kind of an unintended consequence of 401ks replacing pension plans. You can take your 401k with you.
Yeah,
therefore,
go wherever you want.
As an employee, your loyalty to the company was somewhat diminished. In fact, I might even say it was vastly diminished. As a result, companies' propensity to want to invest in their employees also shrank. We're seeing, for some reason, a reversal of that. Now, you know, well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, and I think Professor Hoffman gets this, and that's why we like him. We like him on the show because I think he understands that economists are going to have to figure out this new normal.
Absolutely.
Of how we're going to looking at forward-looking policies based on new paradigms.
You are 100% correct there. What I was taught in economics, macroeconomics classes, what I'm assuming, you know, Dr. Hoffman was taught, was based on 20th century paradigms, 20th century models.
Yes.
That we thought we understood. Now, most, you know, economists, especially on the macro side, not the micro side, will tell you that it was an imprecise science at best. That said, that level of imprecision using old models has evaporated.
Yes, it has.
And so what we've been seeing, largely, I think, because of the way the world economies have become so intertwined, you can't separate them,
mm-hmm.
that all of those models are questionable now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when I hear people like Larry Summers, and, you know, he's a big boy, I can pick on him,
mm-hmm.
quoting stuff that just doesn't seem to apply anymore, but relying on it, I scratch my head and say, wait a second, you know, things have happened since you went to school, Larry.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to take a look at what has actually happened between 1980, 1990, and now, to see that all of the things we thought we understood, we might not understand so much more. And what I'd like to see is some young economists in positions of authority that can really study what's happened over the past 30 or 40 years and build some new models.
Shelley, I'm excited about your shows. You'll be doing two upcoming Tuesdays while I'm away on my annual May vacation. You've got starting next Tuesday. Well, tell our listeners about it. I think it's worth a couple of plugs.
So next Tuesday and the following Tuesday, for the full hour on each day, I will have professors Mike Schaller and Brent Millward from the U of A.
Mm-hmm.
They have both been guests of yours and mine on this show before.
Mm-hmm.
But not together. But not together, yeah. And not for the full hour.
Yep.
And, you know, we're going to talk about some of what you and I just discussed, which is these new paradigms, the idea that the baby boomer and Gen X generations who are still in power to, yeah. our mutual regret, that the things that we had, that we were able to rely on and make part of our career kind of paths as we were growing up, that those things are no longer here. And what we're finding out is that there are lots of folks in subsequent generations who not only have noticed that, they've noticed it with some anger and resentment. And when you take a look at, for instance, polling on economic matters and political matters, the younger folks in those polling have very different results,
mm-hmm.
From, you know, the folks in their 50s and 60s. And so what we're going to talk about with these two professors from the U is that there are ways of understanding the generational changes since the baby boom generation. And those things are very important in terms of making policy and understanding how policy affects people's behavior. And we're going to do a deep dive on this, Bill. We're going to spend 2 hours talking about it. You know, we tried in, I'll kind of give this away, you know, we tried in some pre-show discussions to see the where this might take us. And the discussion became so kind of free-flowing that we found out that we just needed to let that happen. Mm-hmm. And we're going to encourage listeners to call in with questions and comments. And the idea, we have two of these leading professors from the U in the community mm-hmm. talking to the public, strikes me as a tremendous thing.
I think it's going to be a great couple of shows. And depending on how the first show goes, you guys are going to kind of look at the first show, listen to the first show, and go from there
on
the follow-up,
you know,
which
we tried to plan both shows.
No.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And you know...
Because there'll be some areas that you're going to want to expand on from the first show.
Exactly. And also get some listener feedback. So, you know, we're going to make the second show... follow the first, and we'll debrief the first show after next Tuesday, and then figure out what we're going to do on the following week. But you are going to have a great vacation,
mm-hmm.
and you have left your show for a couple of weeks in very good hands, I hope.
Yeah, we got some great guest hosts, including you, Shell. So thank you very much for doing that, Shelley, and we'll look forward to you on the air here in this chair with your two guests on the other side of the table. That's coming up 1 week from today. Thanks, Shelley.
Thank you, Bill, and travel safe.
Thank you very much. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It's the Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Perfect time of year. Spring here. Head over to Green Things. Any gardening questions you have, the very knowledgeable team at Green Things can answer those questions at 3384 East River Road. It's a beautiful site, 13 acres, also home to Zocalo Village and all the beautiful merchandise. So got some great Talavera pottery, beautiful imported items, some kitchen dining room sets, handcrafted, lots of good things at Zocalo Village. Here are the websites, greenthingsac.com and ZocaloVillage.com. They are in their 53rd year of business, and they are open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, that live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Pima County Supervisor, Democrat representing the 1st Supervisorial District. He's one of five members of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. He is a Democrat. His name is Rex Scott. Supervisor Scott, how are you, sir?
Bill, doing great. Thanks again for this monthly opportunity to talk with you and your listeners.
Well, it's always a pleasure. And let's talk a little politics before we go on. Have you pretty much made it official? You are standing for re-election in District 1.
Absolutely. Yes, I intend to file all the necessary documents very soon, and I'm 100% committed to running for re-election next year.
And if elected, you are in line actually to become the president of the Pima of the County Supervisors Association. You've been serving on that. That represents each of the 15 counties. Each has one member. How has that been for you?
Well, I really want to thank my colleague from District 3, Supervisor Bronson, for encouraging me to get involved with the County Supervisors Association. She is a former president of the state association, and she encouraged me when I was elected to become involved. And I'm currently the third vice president, and I serve on the executive board of the County Supervisors Association. And we rotate the presidency among the three caucuses within the association. Those are the small counties, medium counties, and large counties. We are in the large county caucus along with Pinal and Maricopa, and the presidency is going to rotate back to the large county caucus next year when Supervisor Miller from Pinal County is the president. And the next time it rotates back to the large county caucuses is 2027. And if I'm fortunate enough to be reelected by the voters in District 1, then, yeah, I'll be in line to be the president of the State Association in 2027. I'm currently, and have been for the 3 years that I've been on the board, the county's representative to the Legislative Policy Committee for the County Supervisors Association. We meet every Friday while the legislature is in session. There's a supervisor from each one of the 15 counties that serves on the Legislative Policy Committee. It's an almost equal number, Bill, of Republicans and Democrats, but I can recall very few votes that were not unanimous because the interests of counties, as they're being taken up by our legislators, very rarely get into matters of partisanship. The interests of counties are the interests of counties, regardless of whether there's a D or an R after your name.
So for years, the counties were on the short end of the stick here. Money was not money that had been allocated to the counties didn't come to the counties. It was diverted to other things. Has that changed in this legislative session, Rex Scott?
Bill, not at all. The state of Arizona has a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. And then in 1992, the voters of Arizona added another amendment to the Constitution that said that you need a supermajority of both houses of the legislature to pass any revenue measure. That includes not just a tax increase, but rolling back any previously enacted tax cuts or closing a tax credit. And so when the legislature needs to get to that point of having a balanced budget, it's very difficult because of that amendment for them to take any action to raise revenues. So they will shift costs to county and city governments. And in the coming fiscal year, Pima County, just as one example, we're the second largest of the 15 counties. We are going to be absorbing $112 million in state cost shifts. And that $112 million takes up close to 27% of the general fund primary property tax rate. So, and that's an increase of $16 million from last year. So state cost shifts have been something that the legislature has been practicing for many, many years, and no, they have not let up on that practice.
It just doesn't seem right or fair. I don't understand it, but they do it.
They do, and they've been doing it for a long time because that supermajority requirement for revenue measures was enacted by the voters of our state back in 1992. So it's been extraordinarily difficult for the legislature to look at anything other than cutting spending or shifting costs to local governments for decades.
You know, there's a lot of confusion, and we've had a couple of shows on this, and I know you've listened to them, a couple of shows with Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman. It's confusing to many people when they live in the county. I'm a member living in District 1, yet I received mailers urging me to vote a particular way in this special city election. The county really has no say in this, Rex Scott.
We don't, Bill, and I'm in the same situation that you are. I live in the unincorporated county outside the city limits, but I have received two mailers encouraging me to vote in favor of Prop 412. And I think Council Member Kasachek nailed it when he said that TEP, which is paying for all the costs of this election, is flooding the zone. I think that was the term that Council Member Kasachek used, and getting their campaign propaganda out as far and wide as they can, regardless of whether or not some of those pieces are going to non-city voters.
So it doesn't make one way, if it goes down, it's not going to impact Pima County one way or another.
The only people who are subject to paying the fees that are associated with the passage of Prop 412 are city residents. So no, it has no impact on people who live outside the city.
All right. Before we take the break, this is, of course, a big week. It's the end of Title 42. I think that actually officially happens tomorrow. There's a lot of concern, Supervisor Scott, that this end of Title 42 could overwhelm Pima County with the number of migrants coming through our county.
Well, I think there's legitimate reason for concern, Bill. Biggest month for asylum seeker releases up to now has been December of 2022, when we averaged about 490 per day being released. And there was one day that month where we had a high of 770 released. Once Title 42 goes away, and it's the last day is Thursday, we could have releases of right around 1,000 a day, and that very well could overwhelm the resources that we have in place. There have been situations in the past where the resources that we've set up, the Casa Litas Welcome Center, the former big box store on Drexel, some of the local hotels, where they were becoming overwhelmed, and the Customs and Border Patrol, when that happens, will designate the Greyhound station downtown Tucson for local releases. We were able to avoid that in recent occurrences because the city of Tucson set up some emergency shelter spaces, and so we didn't have those street releases. We also have the capacity through the vendors that we contract with to send asylum seekers after they're released by Customs and Border Patrol up to Maricopa County to some of the nonprofits up there who are helping with asylum seekers and providing them the temporary shelter they need. But this number is going to be unlike anything that we've seen before.
And the facility, I believe it's West Drexel Road near I-10. What's the capacity over there at that particular facility?
Well, it's important for people to know that it is only halfway up and running. It is not going to be fully operational until a few weeks from now. I think its capacity is right around 150.
Wow.
Our total capacity, Bill, if you take into account all of the resources that the county has, not just the facility on Drexel, our total capacity is right around 1,000. So most asylum seekers are only in the community for a period of 48 to 72 hours max, and having that capacity of 1,000 is a good thing. But if they are expecting releases that could be around 1,000 a day, you can see how that could start to overwhelm the resources that we have, and then we are going to have to work in partnership with the city and whatever emergency shelter they can provide, and also with the resources that we have up in Maricopa County.
It's going to be a very kind of touch and go, as they say, a fluid situation, Rex Scott. We'll see how all that plays out. Let's take a break right here. More with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Hard to believe Memorial Day is only a couple of weeks away. That Saturday of Memorial Day, I believe it is the 27th over in Silver City, the Blues Festival, their annual event, big event. Music lovers come from all over for this. The good news is it's free, and they've got some great top name performers in the blues arena that will be performing in Silver City. Silver City is only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. I hope you'll take a look at their website and then think about a drive over there to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. The website is southwestnewmexico.org for information on all the activities, lots of things to do, a lot of outdoor activities, great places to stay and dine as well. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Pima County Supervisor Democrat Rex Scott, representing the first supervisorial district, with us on our live line. Supervisor Scott, I think it was about a year ago, the board, maybe it's been longer, the board moved forward with early childhood education scholarship program. Has there been an update on that?
Bill, there has been, and I want to share that information with your listeners. But first, if I may, I'd like to correct something that I said before the break. I was reviewing a memorandum that the board got yesterday about our current situation with the different facilities that we have for the sheltering of asylum seekers. And the Drexel facility has become fully operational as of this week.
Okay.
So its capacity will be right around 300. Our total capacity, taking into account all of the facilities that we have, is 1,000. I thought it was going to be a while longer before the Drexel facility was fully up and running, but it is as of this week.
Well, the bottom line is that 1,000 is going to be kind of pushing it, isn't it?
Stretch to the limit.
Yeah.
Again, we have not seen numbers like this before. I think December of 2022 gave us a glimpse of what the end of Title 42 may be like, but only a glimpse.
All right, let's move on to early childhood education.
Right.
What's the latest on that?
Well, I had requested an update on the financial status of the program from the county administrator and her team, and we got that just recently. And I am pleased to say that we have enough American Rescue Plan Act funds, pandemic relief funds, to pay for the program through the first 4 years. It was going to pay for the program only for the first three, but we're able to pay for it for the first four. Then we will begin the transition to using a portion of the secondary property tax that funds the library district to pay for the scholarships. We got permission to do that from the previous legislature and the previous governor, Governor Ducey. Actually, that legislation gave permission to any county to take that kind of step if they wanted to. But what's really exciting, Bill, is that in the first year of this program, we were able to help 900 kids who would not have been able to go to preschool otherwise. This current school year, it's going to be over 1,200. Next year, we're going to be able to help right around 1,500 kids. And to me, it's one of the most important expenditures in our budget, if not the most important, because when you invest in a child, what that means to that child and their family is absolutely immeasurable. When you're able to invest in 1,500 kids like we will next year, then you're investing in the potential and the future of our community. And the other thing I wanted to say about the program's financial stability is that we are on solid ground all the way through 2028. In 2028, we'll need to take a look at all of the means of revenue for the program, but we have no need to recalibrate or reassess things until that point. So that's good news for our partners in the K-12 districts and the private sector providers of preschool. They know that there's a stable funding for the program moving forward. There's a terrific partner that we have in the local United Way and their Accelerate Quality program. Tony Penn and Monica Brinkerhoff and their team are helping us to expand preschool capacity in this community through Accelerate Quality, a United Way funded program that helps preschool providers to meet the standards set by the state of Arizona if you're going to run a preschool in the state. So it's going gangbusters, Bill, and we are helping kids left and right, and that can only mean good things for those kids, those families, and our entire community.
And that's your previous career as an educator. You know how important it is to get kids off to a good start.
Absolutely, and I am married to an early childhood teacher, and my wife, when she was a kindergarten teacher, she will tell you that she could tell the first day which of her kids had had the benefit of preschool and which ones had not. And knowing what we do about brain development, it is not a luxury. It's not a frill. Kids need to be exposed to literacy, numeracy, and the other content that they learn in greater detail in their K-12 years. They need to be exposed to that content in preschool.
So the preschool, just roughly percentage-wise, how many percent of kids are in some kind of preschool program in Pima County? Do you have any idea?
If we are looking at all of the kids, now this is just the kids who benefit from not only the county's support, but also subsidies through the state's Department of Economic Security or subsidies through the voter-funded First Things First program. Locally, those subsidies help about 35% of kids who are preschool age. But then there's an additional number whose families don't require any subsidies to pay for the cost of preschool. But if we're going to help even more kids, then we're going to have to continue to work to increase preschool capacity and also, Bill, to find a way to better compensate preschool teachers and the paraprofessionals who work alongside them. Salary and benefit issues for preschool educators, just like for educators across the state, is a substantial concern, and we've not been able to open some of the preschool classrooms that we want to see opened, especially in some of the K-12 districts, because it's difficult for them to find educators because of the salary and benefits issue.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, thank you very much. We'll look forward to you being with us in June. I should be very rested after a little bit of a vacation coming up here starting tomorrow. So wish you all the best.
Well, you as well, Bill. And I was really jealous when I heard you the other day say that you and Ann have been to over 100 countries.
Yes.
Just an extraordinary lifetime of travel.
Yeah, it's been a great ride that continues on, which is the good news. Rex Scott, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Bill. Thanks again.
All right. On behalf of Supervisor Scott and John, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well. Have a great afternoon.